Welcome to The Lead Creative. In this episode, I talk to Nedbank Group's Group Executive, Group Marketing and Corporate Affairs, Kensani Nobanda, about the value of marketing and creative awards.
Yeah, I think they're massively valuable. So I'll start with the employee part, right? Don't you want to work for a winning team? I know I do. Like, so when I see an agency winning awards, I feel like it's obvious, right?
We also discuss how she collaborates with agency partners. She shares her views on how brands can differentiate themselves with increased brand parity across industries.
So you have to start with your brand and what you stand for. Is that different? We believe that what we stand for, which is to say, when you manage your money better, you can make a positive impact in your own life, in your company, in your family's life, in society. We believe that's differentiated, and that's what we call see money differently. So in a category that actually in general looks the same, you have to use your positioning as what your differentiator is.
If you're looking for insights and perspectives that may shift your views on marketing and advertising, this episode is for you.
Welcome to the Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe.
Kensani, thank you so much for making the time to talk to us on The Lead Creative. And to kick things off, right, as a marketer who is also a football lover, I'm not going to mention the team whose T-shirt I saw you wearing, the South African team. And we're also not going to talk much about the recent performance of your other favorite team, Liverpool. So we'll leave those out. But do you find some parallels between sports, but specifically soccer, and marketing?
So it's funny, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine about 2-3 years ago around how tough it must be to manage a football team or any sports team at that, for that matter. You finish your game, you've just lost, you must stand in front of all these media, they put a microphone in front of you. How did you F this up? What did you do wrong? And you're like, yes, and we've lost, we know, right? It's like, imagine if it was like that in business or in marketing. You've just landed the marketing campaign. There's someone with a microphone in front of you going, well, that looks like a really bad campaign. How do you feel about it and stuff? So I don't feel like we quite have the same pressures, fortunately, in the context of everyone just being able to comment and have so many things to say about you. Although everyone thinks they can be a marketer, I'm not sure everyone thinks they can be a footballer. I think they're all clear that they can't. However, where I find the parallel, I think really goes to the theme that I have for the team, for example, this year, which is divine discontent. And what does divine discontent mean? It means that even if we're at the top of our game, even if we're doing well, which is divine, that mustn't mean that we must be content, because there's people trying to do better or as well as you. And again, taking it back to football, a few years ago when Liverpool, I think we hit 100 points, yet we were still second in the league. Now that, you know, for City, for themselves, they must have looked back and said, we can't be content because this team is coming. I think we ended up actually winning the league the next year and stuff. So marketing and branding for me is the same. You can do great work, release great results, but you can't rest on your laurels. You can't think that's it. Like, you know, I've done really well. And so, you know, chill, I'm out of this, because everyone else is looking and going, we're going to go for them. We're going to see who's going to remove them off their pedestal and stuff. And by the way, like in business, in marketing, in banking, we generally all have the same tools and resources and all of that. I think what differentiates teams, brands, people is their energy, is their mindset, is how they just decide, we're not giving up, we're not going to be happy with this. No matter what happens, we stand up and we come back again. So for me, that's where the parallels lie.
That's interesting. And I think what I like about that is this idea, right, that sometimes when you keep winning, you become the giant that everybody wants to slay, right? Like, you become their dragon and everybody comes after you and they keep improving and becoming more agile. Your bio talks about bringing brands to life. It talks about harnessing creativity to make business impact. Can you share what your approach is to creating that process, to creating this process or having this process of bringing a brand to life, both from collaborating with your agency partners to delivering on business strategy?
Yeah, I think the first thing for me is that at Nedbank, if you look at the pillars of growth strategically for the business, it is technology, it is people, and it's our brand. Now, when strategically you're all aligned as an organization, that your brand is foundational to your growth, that's a really important place to be, because what it means is you're all saying that we're all going to speak from the same narrative and the same purpose, which is fantastic. I think the second thing is getting your marketing team and organization to understand that in building the brand, this is not about pretty pictures. I always explain to people that if you think about a brand like, what's that thing that hit the Titanic?
Iceberg.
I'm going to forget my English. That iceberg. Yeah. So if you think about a brand like an iceberg, the top part, which is above the water, is what everyone sees, the advertising and stuff. But actually the bottom part, which is the service, the products, the experience that you get and stuff, that's actually the brand. People don't say, oh my God, I hate Nedbank service, but I love their ads, so I'm going to bank with them. Like no one says that and stuff. You don't bank with an organization because they've got great advertising. You bank with them because the entire brand all speaks together in one narrative and stuff. So whenever I say that, like that bit around, you know, the brand is core to the success of the organization, I mean every touch point that the consumer experiences of Nedbank, whether it's our ads or service or the experience or whatever it is, has to actually build a particular narrative for the brand to ensure that we grow in the future. And then you need your marketing team, to make sure that they understand that they're not just pretty picture people at the top. They need to make sure that the entire ecosystem is actually building one brand. Then the last bit, I think, is with our advertising agencies. Like the way I work with our agencies is very much, my earring just fell down, is very much a partnership model. Where they are part of the success or not that we have, to the extent where I've actually challenged our agencies. I mean, a few years ago, you know, our results would come out, our financial results would come out, and none of the agencies would call me to say, hey, we read your financial results. This is what it looks like is happening. How can we help you? How can we support you? And that's weird for me, because the only way that you as an agency can get more money is if the brand you work on makes more money. So you should really be like really in tune with how that organization is performing. Now, when I talk about creativity being able to drive business results, I absolutely believe that. And there's been so many examples of that. I'll take Nike and Adidas. I'm actually a massive Adidas fan, far more than Nike. But I think if you look at the revenue performance, the share price performance, the growth of Nike, the reason it's been so much stronger than Adidas, truly speaking, is because they've got great creativity. And they use it to get the brand out there in terms of the products that they have, in terms of the sports people that they work with and stuff. So I always find it very sad, for example, that, you know, after Argentina won the World Cup, if I was CMO of Adidas, I would have created the most S-hot campaign talking about Messi's journey and talking about the product integration within Messi's journey and stuff. So Nike is a great proponent for me if you look at just two brands that showcases that actually the creativity hasn't just been for fun. They've won great awards and all of that. But you look at their share price, you look at their business growth, it's far superior to Adidas. And that already tells you that the creativity part has to be part of how you tell the story of the brand and the products and the services that you have.
One of the things that you mentioned there, especially about the narrative of the brand and that golden thread, as well as agencies seeing your performance and contacting you about your performance. If I could put those two down to a word, is care, right? You need to care about the brand and care about the people. Now, as a marketer who doesn't really sit at branch level, you visit the branches and all of that, right? There's sometimes tends to be this disconnect between your really big picture thinking, strategic thinking, and the care on the ground. How do you navigate that? How do you trickle that care down to the person on the ground to care as much about the brand and see that strategic big picture thinking the same way that you do? Because it's evident in the work that you've done.
Do you know what's amazing? It's not only my job. I always say there are 26,000 brand ambassadors for Nedbank. Our job as leaders in the organization and as marketing is for them to understand what the narrative is, why the narrative is in that way, and how the narrative can help us deliver better. I can challenge you now, Mungiz, and I hope they never embarrass me because I always say this. You can walk into any of our branches and ask a teller, what's your Nedbank's brand purpose? And they'll tell you what it is, which is like, it's unheard of. You know, no one's ever tested me on this, but I feel like they'll tell you what our purpose is. But that's because it's not just my job. Yes, the Exco and I set the agenda for what that's going to look like. Below us, there's a team of executives who buy into that, who then have to ensure that in their way, they bring it down. I think that's the first thing. The second thing, in the last few years, the employee brand conversation has become such a big narrative. I think in the past, we've always thought about the client experience, but actually the employee experience is also very important. And the employee experience has to come from what the brand narrative is. And you have to put as much care as you put to getting your clients as you do to your employees. So when we talk about what's the Nedbank way, when we talk about what are the Nedbank values, when we talk about what's the Nedbank employee value proposition, our employee brand, those things all have to be the same side of the same, it's like two sides of the same coin. So our customer experience or client experience this side, employee experience this side. You cannot expect your employees to care and give a damn and give clients that sort of client experience that you're trying to drive when you're not giving them the right employee experience, because then they're looking at it and saying there's such a disconnect to those things. So we make sure that it's two sides to the same coin. They build to each other, and we apply as much energy. Three of my meetings today, I'm not kidding, have been about employees. Three of my meetings today have really been about how do we continue to ensure that they are clear what our employee value proposition is. And it's the same way we do that when we're talking about our products. The one new thing that we've put together is we're saying that there is a client experience, there's an employee experience, and both those things make up an overall brand experience. And there's a type of work that we're doing now to really understand. We know how to measure client experience, which is NPS, and currently Nedbank is number one on NPS. We know how to measure employee experience, which is around our Pulse survey. Again, is Nedbank a great place to work? What is the overall then one number for brand experience taken from these two things that we're trying to build together? But you have to put as much, and I love the word care. I think actually this other podcast that I did the other week, like I got asked, what would be the single most advice you would give for a marketer, you know, to really manage a brand? And I said, care about that brand. It's yours for a few years to take care of.
Yeah.
Like, respect it and care for it, yeah. And you'll be able to deliver great work.
Mm-hmm. Your collaboration and support of the creative industry, from the Lurie's to Cannes, Ad Focus, is very well documented. So I won't go much into that because that's like all over the place. But I've spoken to agency leaders about their perspective on the value of creative awards, and the answers ranged from inspiration for their team. They contribute sometimes to the bottom line and they push the creative industry forward the more awards there are. From a client's perspective, with over two decades of experience within this space, what would you say the value of creative awards is?
Yeah, I think they are massively valuable. So I'll start with the employee part, right? Don't you want to work for a winning team? I know I do. Like, so when I see an agency winning awards, yeah. I feel like it's obvious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're talking about, what's his name, Mbappe right now. I don't know where Mbappe is going, but I can tell you what he's thinking about. He's not thinking about, I don't want to denigrate any team, right? Like, but yeah. He's going to be thinking about, I'm going to join a football team that has the opportunity to give me a Champions League, a this, a that. For me, that's what awards are about, because they are basically putting a stake in the ground and saying, we're the type of agency that likes to win, especially especially Mongezi, and this is really, really important, with awards that are real. Yes. And you know what I mean by that, right? Yeah. Like I'm really proud of, if I look at the Grand Prix that we got, like the silvers that we've had and the golds that we've had for Nedbank, they've been real work. This is the work that like Exco has said, Kenzie, we're happy with and stuff. Yeah, maybe there's little pieces of creativity here and there like that are smaller, but it's been our real work. So for me, from an employee perspective, it definitely it literally invites people to come work for you who say, I want to work for a winning team. Like whether it's the agency people, but also as a brand. Whenever I speak to procurement, I always say, I want to work with the best agencies in South Africa. Like I'm not going to go and, you know, that's what I want to do. And if I'm going to do great work, that's what I must do. So that's, I think, the first part of it. I think the second part of it is, it's actually an interesting one, and it's maybe linked to why I decided to be very involved in the industry. I've been in the industry for more than 20 years. I've seen the quality of thinking not being as strong as it was when I started in marketing many, many years ago. So just at a basic level, right? If someone says, I'm writing a brief, and I say to them, okay, what's your objective in the brief and stuff? And they're like, awareness. And I go, okay, that's fine. Have you actually sat down to understand what's driving the challenges of the brand from a marketing perspective? And is awareness the issue? And should we be solving that? So the other reason that I get really involved is I want to make sure that we're not losing the high standards that we have, whether it's through Ad Focus or Lurie's or that, because when we keep the standard high, it ensures that we are looked at professionally and we're not looked at as those people who are just doing pretty pictures and all of that. And it's important that marketers are part of that conversation, because if they are not, you're going to have agencies only worried about awards for just, oh, it was a great ad. But the reason you need all these great, like different award shows. So, for example, I'm also part of the AFIS and stuff, which is about results of creativity. So you do need the marketing industry in that conversation, because it manages the creativity and business results balance really, really well. So you know that I'm working with agencies that, yes, can be creative in their own right, but the work that they do actually builds businesses and builds brands. And I wish more senior marketers would get involved in the industry. Yeah, so I think, yeah, for me, it's that. I get involved for that. But the awards piece is important. Like, you know, people lie and say awards are not, like, important. Well, then, I mean, I don't know why Liverpool cares about, winning anything. Yeah. Then, you know, FA Cup, we shouldn't even have entered the field, right? Like, what's the point and stuff? Yeah. So the awards are important. They're an indication of, you know, how you perform as an agency. And by the way, they actually advertise you as an agency. Like, I mean, again, I'm really not trying to speak, like, but I knew of the agency promise. But I can tell you the work that they've done in the last 2 years and how well they've done has actually elevated them in my mind. And if there was ever a conversation somehow, I'm not saying Joe Public's my agency, I'm not going away from Joe Public anytime soon. But when we start to think about, oh, maybe we do need new agencies, all of a sudden Promise is top of mind for me. Why? I saw them at the Lurie's. I saw them at the Creative Circle. I saw them, you know, so actually for me, they do even help you as an agency profile yourself and market yourself. Yeah.
So two questions on that. One of the agency leaders that I asked this question said, yes, awards matter in all of the ways that you've said, but there are agencies that have won an award today and got fired tomorrow kind of situation, right? Where they matter, but there's more to it than the awards. I think there's the first part of the question. And the second part of the question, for agencies that are good but not award-winning, how do those agencies come onto your radar?
Yeah, it's okay. So let me start with the first one. Clearly, from when you create the work to when the actual award ceremony happened, there's something that happened, like, in the between there, because you can't go from, like, we've won awards and then cheers by and stuff. And I mean, we all know the advertising process is like that. We all know when we enter these things that it actually takes some time, because there's no way you can be winning awards for the brand and actually you get fired unless the work that you've been creating hasn't been solving real business issues. You've been creating work because you've been focused on the awards versus what is this trying to solve. Then obviously me as a client, I go, oh, you're not worried about my business. You're only worried about his awards and stuff. That's a very different conversation. So I can understand how that can happen and stuff. I think, sorry, what was the second part of your question?
So the second part is for a good agency that can service your business, how do they come onto your radar if they're not winning awards?
Yeah, look, so it's hard. Obviously, I've just spoken about Promise Now. It's an agency that I knew of, but, you know, they recently have really come onto my radar because of the awards and stuff. And again, I mean, I'll take it back to football. 10 years ago, did you know a Man City fan?
Very rarely, yeah. Very rarely. They
I mean, I think I know one even now. But the point is they started winning. And people love that virtuous cycle of winning. So they started getting people to know them and get to them because they were winning. And guys, we can't take anything away from that. Like it can feel bad for other smaller agencies, but we can't take anything from that. Winning is actually a virtuous cycle. But what I can say, though, is, and this depends on the organization, we've brought on board a couple of agencies that, to be honest, I've never won them to win any awards. The agenda there is they've obviously pitched, they've shown us what they can do. We think it's good enough. We want to work and partner with them to get them to a level where, and these are Black-owned, 100% Black-owned and managed agencies. We want to partner with them to get to a point where, like, we can all look back, both parties can look back in 10 years' time and said, we moved this agency from X to Y, even if they leave us for another bank because actually it's a bigger job for them or it's a bigger account, I'll still look back and go, they never would have gotten there without us. But our lead agency will always have to be an agency that I think is one of the best in the country because that's like the type of people that I want to work with. That's how I hire, even in my team. I do want to work with the best, but I cannot underestimate the role that we have as CMOs and stuff around, especially transformation, is how do we bring in less well-known agencies, but we can see they're doing good work. They might not be award-winning, and actually partner with them to grow so that in the future, I don't care which brands or organizations they work with, I can at least say we played our role in ensuring that, you know, we grew those agencies.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
That's very important. That's very important. And I mean, I have listened to your conversations where you talk about transformation, you talk about the importance and value of transformation. While sticking with this idea of awards, is there work that might be award-winning from the start and you know it, or rather work that isn't, that you know has the potential to? How do you get that work over the line? Or do you just know that this work has the potential and that piece of work doesn't have the potential? You've spoken about the customer experience. You've spoken about the brand experience. You've spoken about the employee experience. Are those the things that drive the work and the award is a bonus? Or is the work that you know that this piece of work has potential?
So, I mean, like I said, I think what I'm happy about is that, like, most of the work, probably 90% of the work that Nedbank has won for is real work. Mm-hmm. Whether it's on our brand, whether it's on our CVPs and all of that, it's been real work. But there's sometimes, so we've got this partnership relationship contract with Joe Public, which says we're going to do work where people say, oh, wow, did a bank do that, right? And at times, when we've looked at the work, we go, yeah, this is, did the bank do that work? We know. Like, we know this is going to be award-winning. Yes. It might not get us a Grand Prix, but it's going to get something somewhere, right? Like, we know that. And sometimes we know it won't, but functionally, it's actually delivering what is required in the context of the, you know. So I'll tell you about our office in New York, right, that we do for retail. Retail in any sort of organization is very difficult because you're constantly churning out work. Now you're expecting creatives to constantly be thinking about all these creative ideas. You're trying to sell a home loan here, personal loan, credit card, transaction account. It's a lot. Mm. So when we created the Air Officini world, it was trying to give us a space where every time we launch something new from a product perspective, actually, we've got a framework and it makes it easier for the creatives, right? For the, oh, okay, cool. It's my goals plus this time or my goals premium. Yeah. All we need to, the characters are the same. Yes. But, you know, we know that work will never win us awards and stuff. Does it do the job that it needs to do? It absolutely does. It sells the CVP and the product. It's mostly funny. People generally enjoy, like, you know, those. But we know it's not going to win us awards. But we agree that very sort of openly with each other that this is not award-winning, but it's going to do the job. There's sometimes work like Secrets, like Reality Check last year, where upfront I knew Reality Check would win us awards. But what did it also do? It challenged South Africans, and because it said 90% of South Africans cannot afford to save. So here are the products that you can use to save from Nedbank. What happened? We got awards, but we also saw our investment and savings portfolio do really, really well. So for me, you don't need the one, like you can do both. You can do the business bit and you can do the creativity bit. But there's work that I just know this is the this work is going to get us awards and I've got a sense for it.
Yeah.
And sometimes, by the way, and I'll take Reality Check again. Reality Check, I said to Marty Schlumpf, who was the ECD at Joe Public, I said, we're going to mess up this work. So once we'd approved the concept, I said, you work with the production company and the director. You show me an offline. I don't want me or any of my team involved in the production bit of it after we've approved the concept because I feel like as client, oh my God, make sure he's wearing a green dress and this and this. Like, we might mess this thing up. Yeah. And I remember the first time I saw Reality Check in the offline, I cried, and because I knew just what a beautiful piece of work it was, but I also knew that it was tapping into a strong South African insight and that we'd be able to use that strong South African insight to really push people to invest and save far more than, you know, they would in the past and stuff. So yeah, I mean, I've got a very good sense, like most of the time, that I mean, there's three pieces of work we're working on right now that if you call me after the Lurie's Mongezi, I'll probably tell you I knew they would.
Yeah, and I think with the Officini work, I think everybody everybody wonders what Sharon is saying next.
Exactly.
Yeah, so yeah, that's interesting. So given your passion for driving transformation, which you've spoken about now in the advertising and marketing industries, what challenges have you faced in pushing for more inclusive and diverse representation within the campaigns that you work on? And how did you overcome those challenges?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think transformation for me in marketing and advertising is in two ways. The first one is in representation in the campaigns themselves or the ads themselves and stuff. So one thing about brands is our role in society is to showcase the type of society that we want to see. I always like think about the first brand that would have shown a mixed couple in South Africa was a Brave brand, because what that brand was saying is this is the South Africa that we want to see. And I think as brands, like, we have to be brave enough to be able to do that, to showcase the type of society that we want to see or highlight the issues in society that we think are problematic. And I think some of the issues from inclusiveness, like inclusivity in advertising is one. I take being a woman, and I spoke about this in Malaysia, actually. I think it was last week or the week before and stuff, where I said there's a study that showed that men are 70% more likely to be shown in professional roles or leadership roles in advertising versus women. Yet, if you look at from an economy perspective, purchasing decisions are 80% done by women. Yet we're still doing advertising that showcases women in much more subservient sort of roles and stuff. And I think our role as advertisers, as marketers, is to ensure that we are showcasing a society that is much more inclusive and a much more diverse and transformed. And I mean, an example I'll give you is when we were working on the Secrets campaign, one of the storylines that was put on the table was this stereotypical thing of a young black man, you know, gets his job for the first time, and then decide to go buy, you know, to go rent an apartment in Midrand, sit on a beanbag, but drives a massive brand new car that is incredibly expensive. And that was one of the stories they wanted us to tell. And I said, as our brand doesn't do that, we're not going to be an underlinement of stereotypes. And it is such a responsibility that I carry with care again. And it can't be things that we just allow to get through, because then we are underlining the stereotypes that exist instead of trying to showcase the type of society that we want to see and we want to build. So I think that's the first part. So for me, it's about ensuring that your voice is heard in the room. You've got the CCO, ECD, director, producer, blah, 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 but ultimately you're the client and actually you're paying. So use your voice and your money to be able to drive that agenda. I think the second part of transformation is the industry itself and the value chain within that industry. I think both us, agencies, production companies are to blame here. So when we brought on board the two fully Black-owned and Black-managed agencies and stuff, one of the mistakes we made is we didn't carve out the pie ourselves. Like, so I should have said, if Nedbank's budget is 100%, X percent is going to these agencies. I sort of expected the system to do that because I'd said we're bringing them on board. So the system must do it. And the system didn't. So what did I then do? I had to take all our projects for the year and say, these are going to these agencies and that's my call. And it's happening. Like, and then no one can say anything and stuff. It's happened with Out of Home. And it's funny, I got challenged twice last week on Out of Home. 4 or 5 years ago, we put a stake in the ground as Nedbank and we said between 70 and 80% of our outdoor holding is going to be in the hands of Black-owned, Black-managed out-of-home companies. We achieved it in 1 year. You put your eye off the ball for 1 year, you go backwards, Mungezi. So this transformation thing is not like you do it once and then you're like, yeah, happy, you are done. Because actually the next year you still have to sign new contracts. And if you're as client are not continuing to look at the number and push the number, you can actually go backwards on something that is fundamentally important to your brand and what you stand for. So I got challenged twice last week from two Black-owned out-of-home media owners who bumped into me and said, we've lost business from Nedbank. And I was like, that can't be possible because this is what we committed to. But when I took a step back, I realized, well, I'd lost my eye on the ball. I just thought it was done and it would just continue and stuff, but it doesn't. So you have to continuously do that. But it's also not fair on the client. Like, I think the production companies and the agencies themselves have to come to the party. They have to sign, we have to shake hands and say, is this both our goals? Because I want to only work with agencies who are committed to transformation. If you're not committed to seeing this country be a sustainable country, then I don't want to work with you. So whilst I will raise my hand up and saying, I think we've done some really good things and we haven't sustained some of them, our partners have to help us sustain those things. It can't be just us pushing them. They have to be committed and want to do those type of things.
You've seen the industry evolve a lot over the past two decades. And I'm just curious to find out how you walk this tightrope of having this big picture, strategic thinking, what the work should achieve and all of that. And on the other side of that, trusting your agency partners enough, especially when they challenge your comfort zone or what's comfortable to you in executing that work. How do you achieve that balance?
It can only be done from experience, to be honest. It's not something that comes easily. I mean, like I've done ads with Ogilvy who did Rama Margarine? I don't think it was Ogilvy. I think it was Low Bull at that time. That experience from working on Rama Margarine with Low Bull, working with Matthew Bull, with some really senior marketers, it grew me. It's just that simple, right? And that's why whenever I'm mentoring people and they say to me, what do you think I should go to next? I always say to them, you have to choose, depending on where you are in your career, you have to choose brands, organizations, or businesses that are actually doing marketing, because it is the only way you can grow your own muscle around advertising, where you know that actually, you know, I think this is challenging. I'm worried about it, but my muscle tells me that we'll be fine and we'll go through it. If you don't have that experience, you're not going to do brave work. And I think the bravest work we did under me, the first one, was Secrets. And Mongezi, when we showed Secrets internally at Nedbank to the top 300 Nedbank leaders, I think more than 60% of that room said, she's effing up our brand, literally. So I now had to be the brave one to, like, knowing that I had these leaders in the bank thinking she's not doing the right thing for our brand. And you know why they were doing that? Because they don't have the muscle that I have. I don't blame them. Most of them are risk people, accountants, blah, blah, blah. They look at the work. They don't have the muscle that I have through my experience in marketing to saying, I know this is like really brave. I know this is pushing the boundaries, but I think it's going to get us to where we need it to and stuff. And it did. I mean, the shock, the emails I got after launch because of the response was insane. Like everyone going, some people apologizing to me and saying, like, we're sorry, we didn't trust you. Yeah. Like, you know, all the noise. I was just incredibly lucky that the two people who trusted me on this was our chief executive and our COO. So Mike Brown and Mfundo. They had my back on this, although they were very nervous, by the way. And then let's get to nerves. You know, when I'm not nervous about work, I know it's not going to be great work.
Yes.
Like when I'm like approving the work and going, this okay, is signed this off. Is I know we haven't this pushed like ourselves. I want to be nervous.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's, and a lot of the work that as brands we're putting out there, none of us are nervous about as heads of marketing. We're all going, yeah, this is easy. I want the work where, like Secrets, where I called Ntabi saying, who was the, she was my executive head of group marketing at the time. I said, Ntabi, like every time, that's the work I want. Like, oh my God, like it must make me feel nervous. But I relied so much on my experience in terms of knowing that as nervous as this thing is making me, it's the right thing. I do use research, but research can tell you so much, right? Mm. And remember, this was a 15-minute movie. How do you research a 15-minute movie with like consumers and stuff? Sure. So for us, there was a massive risk in doing all of that. But I can tell you, having the support of Mike Brown and Mfundo was also very important, because had it failed, they would have been in it with me. So they would have had to say, you know what, guys, we actually agreed it with her. So you have to also see how you use the network and the circle around you to be able to, because it's not always going to work out. Let me tell you, it's not. Yes. Yeah. So how do you make sure that you've got like that cover, that air cover as marketing, to make sure that if that work lands, like really, you know, and I'm very fortunate that Mfundo and Mike don't approve like our advertising at all. Sure. The only reason I only show them work that makes me nervous because I want a cover. Like, yeah. So that's the only time I'll be like, Mike, what do you think? And he goes, what are you doing now? Again, like, but no, yeah.
That's a good point. And I think that is, that covers the opposite of the question that I wanted to ask you next about that. I think, and that opposite being that in spite of what the data tells you, because that's data, right? Like that's people giving you a real-time response. In spite of what the data tells you, you went against the grain and the work really performed well. Now, can you share an example of when you listened to the data and it influenced the decision of your work and the work worked really well? I suppose that's the normal. That's the norm, I suppose.
Yeah, but I think people use research like not in the right way. So whenever they research creativity, if I don't use research creativity for the audience to say, I hate it or I like it, I use research to help me optimize the ad. If you come in with the idea of it's rather about optimization versus a client telling me that they like the ad or they don't like the ad, we'd never do it. So I take the anti-advertising work. I don't know if you remember it, but basically what it was firstly, you would think maybe we are advertising a car or we're advertising a perfume. As the ad would go on, you'd realize, oh, we're talking about debt, actually, we're talking about like something else. But the start of it was this tip, because the whole idea was trying to say to people, we need to stop this consumerism and actually start to think about investing and all of that. Sure. When we researched that, what came out for us was more confusion on the messaging. So instead of saying to the agency, people are confused, we're not doing this work, we said, how do we make sure that the messaging is much more clearer in terms of what we're trying to do? I think as marketers, you can't hand over research to clients and say, you tell me yes or no, and I'll decide if I'll do it. I use it for optimization. There's been very few times where, because of research, I've said we're not doing it. It would have to be a very old example. It wasn't advertising. It was around bottles. When I was Smirnoff brand manager and we tested the new Smirnoff we ended up calling it triple distilled at that time because we wanted to change from the old Smirnoff bottle. I'll never forget how the research audience reacted. So basically they sat and looked at this nice new bottle. They said, we love it. This is such a beautiful bottle. We then said to them, so we're going to remove this, we're going to remove the old Smirnoff bottle and this is your bottle. They walked out of research. I was like, people are serious about their skin. What was Smirnoff 1818?
Yeah.
So that's the one time I've actually said, whoa, I'm not playing with this. Walk out of research, but most times but what did we do actually? We ended up launching the new one and keeping the old one and starting to how do we think about evolving the old one to some stage being the new one? And actually, if you look at the Smirnoff bottle now, it still costs Smirnoff 1818, but it's actually evolved to the new shape. So it's no longer the old shape. So we did get there. And I think when people understand that you need to use research, not for a yes or no answer, that's your job. You need to use it to say, how do I optimize and make sure that what I land in market is actually better than what we initially started with?
True. Yeah. This episode is sponsored by the digitally led customer experience agency, Roger Wilco. For all your customer experience, digital marketing, and web development needs, go to rogerwilco.co.za or rogerwilco.co.uk. You can also download the South African CX report and the Township CX report directly from their website, free of charge. Don't we all love something free every now and again? Especially with insights, right? Now back to the show. In one of our recent episodes, we spoke about the Kantar Brand Z research, which is really around brand equity. And out of that research came the fact that brands that have strong brand equity continue to weather the storms in economic downturns or tough economies and all of that. So, and one of the things that came out as the strong pillars of that piece of research, or at least in that conversation, was this idea of differentiation, that brands that feel different or do something different tend to stand out in the market. So in this space of so much brand parity, how do you ensure differentiation? How do you stand out as being different?
Your first thing is your proposition. In fact, let me say your brand essence has to be different. Maybe I want to take a category that's a bit easy, beer. So ultimately, and maybe Vaughn will kill me for this actually, but I think beer is beer. It might have 5% here, 4.5% here. In fact, actually, let me tell you, when I was at SAB, we would do blind tasting, right? And say to people, remove label, taste, tell me if this is Castle or Black Label, blah, blah. And in general, they all fit into one space. No one could tell the difference. The only difference, the only beer brand, at least at the time when I was there, that pulled out was Milk Stout, pulled out quite significantly, as well as Pilsner Akral, I think, and Miller, actually, Genuine Draft. The rest, Amstel, Heineken, all of them, people couldn't tell them apart and stuff, right? So the differentiation in that category is not in the product, it's in the communication. Sure. And I think SAB or AB InBev, they've done a fantastic job in that. What Carling stands for in people's minds in terms of the champion man is what you buy into. What Castle stands for in terms of being the beer of the nation is what people buy into. Many categories are like that, including banking. Our banking fees are generally the same. We might have on investments, we might be more aggressive on the interest rate. We might have a little promotion that says, you're going to get 50% of your lawyer's fees when you do your home transfer, but they're not massively different things. So you have to start with your brand and what you stand for. Is that different? We believe that what we stand for, which is to say, when you manage your money better, you can make a positive impact in your own life, in your company, in your family's life, in society. We believe that's differentiated, and that's what we call see money differently. So in a category that actually in general looks the same, you have to use your positioning as what your differentiator is. And then what does that mean? You can't just use it in communication. People must see money differently in the branch, in service, on the app. You then have to make sure that your entire ecosystem is built around how do we help people understand that when you manage your money better, you can make a better difference in your life. So don't be scared of money. Like if you see money differently, you can actually understand that money can make a positive impact. It's not this evil thing they talk about or good. All money is a gateway to having a better life and stuff. And when you start to see money like that, you'll start to have a very different relationship with it. Now, Standard Bank doesn't talk like that about money and stuff, right? Although we generally have the same products. So that's the bit like where you have to build the differentiation is what is your brand essence? And then make sure that your entire ecosystem and value system around your brand and your bank is actually built around that. And I always think the beer brands are great examples. It's easier to just understand that actually taste-wise, the beer guys will tell you very different, that it's different. But actually, the difference comes in the positioning of those brands and how they land themselves in market mostly.
Right. No, that's a great point. That's a great point. Kansani, we often invite our guests to ask a question, to ask two separate questions. But the first one really is, if you could ask any living person about their unique take on marketing, creativity, or life, who would that person be? And what is the one question that you would ask them?
Jeez, that's an interesting thing. You should have. I don't think that was in the Q&A. So I must think.
I did mention that there might be one or two curveballs. This is one of them.
Let me think. So I'll tell you, I've got two favorite marketers in the world. One of them is Antonio Lucio, who's currently the CMO at Hewlett Packard, but he's worked on Pepsi. He's worked on Meta, blah, blah, blah. And two years before, I had the opportunity to have him speak to my marketing team. And one of the questions I asked him is similar to that. What advice would you give? I said, to me, to my marketers, blah, blah, blah. In terms of being great marketers. And Antonio said, look after yourself. I was like, thought it would be. So I've actually asked one of my best marketers that question, and the answer really shocked me. He was so vulnerable. At that time, he said to us, he's from South America. I think he's from Colombia, if I remember. I don't want to lie, but it's one of the South American countries. And he was at home at that time. His brother had schizophrenia. And he said, I don't understand why my brother has schizophrenia and I don't. Why am I that lucky to not have schizophrenia? So I've realized in life that as much as we love these brands that we work on and we love the organizations that we work on, actually the most important thing is you and your health and your happiness. And he said to me, so for me, if you are happy and healthy in terms of your own self, you're going to build happy and healthy brands. And I was like, wow, that is not the answer I actually expected and stuff. So yeah, I mean, Antonio is like one of my most admired marketers, just like so accessible. And yeah, I feel like I've already asked him the question. It wasn't the answer I thought I would get, but it's an answer that makes me reflect quite a lot sometimes when I'm going through my own stuff, right? To say, if I'm not happy and healthy, there's no way the brand I'm working on is going to be happy and healthy. I'm actually going on a retreat, Mongezi, in Mexico. It's about 15 global marketing leaders for 7 days to look internally into ourselves and then talk about how we can ourselves change and grow and become better people so that the brands and the organizations that we work for, we can put that into them. Yeah. Because I believe, like I said to you at the beginning, brands really are a reflection and can be a reflection of the society that we want to live in. But we need to be okay to be able to make sure that we land that with the brands that we work on.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So we asked our previous guest...
What's my second curveball question?
We asked our previous guest what they would ask our next guest. And our last guest was Velin Gubane of Avatar. So his question was, while AI is changing products, markets, and creativity, how do you think AI can be used effectively in advertising and marketing or anywhere else on the African continent? And that's because, in his view, AI and a lot of these products are created for the global market, not necessarily with Africa in mind. So for the African context, how can AI be used effectively in creativity, marketing, and business for Africa?
Oh, let me tell you, we are loving sure. AI. Hey? If you think about AI, it learns over time. And in order for it to understand Nedbank or Africa, it's what you're feeding it all the time, right? It starts learning and not becoming, you know, Americanized or whatever. And I'll give you just like with this, the work that we're doing now on creating campaigns, which just excites me. So what we first did is we said, let's take two campaigns that are already in market. And it was our Roblox Chowtown campaign with Kyra and DJ Zinhle. And then it was our private clients campaign already in market done. We said, what if we had used AI to develop sure. these campaigns, right? And we put all these tools together, we briefed them in and we looked at the output. And funnily enough, so when I looked at the private client's work, I was like, we wouldn't have gone with this. But when I looked at the Chowtown work, I was like, Jesus, we would have gone with this campaign. So that was almost like a comfort thing for us to say, it's not necessarily too European or too this sure. or too that, right? Like it already gave us comfort that this is like this, we can use this. Now what we've done is we've actually briefed in a couple of campaigns, and what's happening with the tools that we're using is they're getting to understand Nedbank right. better. They're getting to understand the African continent better. And the more you use them, the more Africanized mm-hmm. they become, right? And they become your proprietary tools that you can actually use, you know, to do, I think, much more efficient work. So in, you know, for campaigns, normally we take more than 3 months, right, to come up with the campaign. That Chowtown Roblox campaign that I'm telling you was in 4 days. Right. So do you think I'm going to be scared of AI? I'm not worried about AI. I want it. It must, like, so there's work, right, that we will always give to our big agencies that to think about and all of that and bring campaigns. But there's work that, seriously speaking, we should be giving to AI to churn out. Yes, there has to be a human being that makes sure that like the output is the right one for your brand and the context that you operate in and stuff. But I'm incredibly excited about AI. I just think, you know, marketers or advertisers who are scared of it are actually not understanding that what you put into it and the more you put into it is the best way that it can help you in the future.
Yeah. Kenzani, thank you so much for making the time to talk to us. I really admire the work that you do, and I think thank you as well for the work that you do, because I think it's not often that you see people from the client side being as involved in the creativity and helping to push creativity the way that someone like you does. So that really matters, and that really makes a massive, massive difference. In closing, what's the one question that you'd like to ask our next guest about their creative process, their approach to thinking, or their thoughts on the industry?
So I'd love to ask the next person that you have on, especially if they're a marketer, when they look on balance, the work that they've done, how much percentage of it can they hand on heart say, I'm incredibly proud of this? And if it's lower than 60%, why are you continuing to do average work?
Okay. You don't want us to have any more guests after that person, clearly.
Hey, I'm asking you, Uri, how much percentage do you think you're proud of? You go, this is my work. And if it's like, honestly, if it's less than 60%, why are you continuing to do average work? Like, because if you can't be proud of it, who's proud of it? Like, if it's not you, like.
No, that's a great question. Thank you. That's a great question. Thank you. Thanks for that, Kenzani.
Awesome. Thanks, Mungiz. It was lovely to chat.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mungiz. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mungiz.com.